This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Bill Nelson is going to be here in 2 weeks to talk about, in this case, he's going to talk about fan fiction. And it's going to be an exciting program because there is so much interest in how you have to protect yourself when you're writing fan fiction and making sure that you don't upset anybody with your fan fiction. So Bill Larson is going to be answering questions. And if you have a question, send it in to me at patsy.radio@gmail.com, and I will have it ready for Bill to answer. But it's going to be a great program, and so I'm really looking forward. And that's going to be on the 28th, so you have plenty of time to send in your questions. And remember that Bill Larson will give you a free consultation anytime to talk about copyrights. As a matter of fact, he is very generous with his time, and he will actually walk you through the entire process to ensure that you are doing your copyrights correctly, because that is a very important thing for a writer. And his telephone number is 727-441-3000, and you can give him a call. And, oh, that's my number. What am I giving? That's a studio number. You can call in that day at 727-441-3000, and his number will come up in the next commercial at the bottom of the hour. But do think about going to see him. And talking over, first, if you have published before and you're not sure if you still have the rights to your book, it's a good opportunity to ask him that question and then to make sure that you do your copyright correctly. And speaking about lawyers, we're going to talk today about one of the most famous lawyers of all time. And I have in the studio with me a writer who has written a book about Abraham Lincoln. And Bonnie Paul is here with me, and in a minute we're going to get to her, and we're going to start talking about Abraham Lincoln, how she came out with this really fascinating book called Lincoln's Springfield Neighborhood. But first, I want to say several things I forgot on Tuesday, which was Valentine's Day. By the way, that program was so much fun. I spoke to Eunice David, Hal David's widow. And she talked all about the wonderful, wonderful love songs that he wrote. And that interview is up. I have a new feature on my website, which is radio-joyonpaper.com. And it is called Featured Interviews. And I have Eunice David's interview there. And it is really fascinating. And we played a lot of the music. So it's full of music and wonderful, wonderful memories from Eunice about Hal, and what a brilliant man he was. And as I said to her, he is probably one of the greatest writers of all time who never actually wrote a book. But lyricists are writers, and it is an important area of writing. And one of the things, you know, if you are have a way with words, you might try a hand at it. You never know. I know one of our listeners, J.S. Lamb, Jim Lamb, who writes poetry. There's one of his poems that I've been rereading. I would keep thinking, I wish I could find a melody for that, because it's really nice, and it's the kind of poem that I would like people to hear. So it's, again, another form of writing, and as I tell all of you, there's probably a book in all of you, at least one book, and so you should just try it and start writing. And maybe if not a book, Hal David certainly did very, very well with lyrics, and so you never know where your talent will lie until you start, and you have to try. And so that's a fun thing about writing. Anybody can do it. You can be a mailman and become somebody like Johnny Clark, who writes wonderful, wonderful war fiction. Tom Clancy, who was an insurance man. So you don't know what you can do until you try it. So it's just so wonderful to be able to write. And that's why I hope that all of you find the joy on paper in your life. And now I want to just introduce here Bonnie. And it's Bonnie Paul, right? And with, and you spell it with two L's.
That's right.
Okay, so when you're looking it up, you have to have two L's. That's an unusual spelling.
It's like your name, Patsy, with a Z.
Patsy with a Z, that's right. It's individual. Okay, so Bonnie, thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here with such renowned company.
Well, thank you. I love books about Lincoln. I am, it's really one of the type of books that I enjoy. And I always love when there are so many books, they will mention in passing something about Lincoln. There'll be some little factoid. And I always like to check, is it real? Is it real? And one of my favorite interviews was with Stephen Harrigan, who wrote a book called A Friend of Mr. Lincoln. And he was on about a year ago. And I'm going to bring him back because he is such a fascinating man. And his book is really an amazing, amazing account of Lincoln's death and what happened after and around the death. And it's just a fascinating book. And again, that is available on my archive page at, which again is radio-joyonpaper.com. And I have so many wonderful interviews on my archive page that you just should check them out. But Stephen Harrigan is very a very fantastic writer, a historian. Now I have in the studio here Bonnie with me. So Bonnie, tell me, how did you get involved with Lincoln? Was he always a love of yours?
Well, my father was a labor lawyer in northern Minnesota, and Lincoln was one of his heroes. I grew up with Lincoln's picture in our house, and I always was interested, but I didn't really like history much as a student. I thought it was boring, and I didn't really know that much about Lincoln, really, and I find most people really don't know that much. They knew he was a pioneer boy and that he was president, he got assassinated, but they don't know much in between. And so when I was living in St. Louis, I was the head of a teacher's institute. We were right on the Illinois border. And a friend of mine said, why don't we drive over to Springfield? You like Lincoln? We go to his home and we'll see, you know, where he was in the House of Representatives and so on. So I said, yeah, let's go. So it was about a 90-minute drive. And we got there and we made the rounds. Patsy, we went to the presidential library, the museum, the monument, and so forth. But by the time we got back to the neighborhood where his home still stands, it was closed. It's run by the National Park Service. So we were able to just walk the streets by ourselves and look at the various plaques. And I began to have the question, well, what was it like to be a neighbor of Abraham Lincoln? I'd never read anything about that. And it's interesting because Mae Sarton, who was an author, a novelist, and a poet, said every book of hers started with a question. And this book started with that question, what was it like to be Lincoln's neighbor? And so I went to the Tim Townsend, who is the historian at the National Historic Site, and I said, can you give me more information about the neighborhood? And he said, well, really, you don't have very much. We just have these little brochures. So I said, well, do you want a book on it? He said, yes. And that was how it started.
Well, that's what I always tell people. There's probably some subject that you can come across in your life, and it just sort of is like a little flash. Ooh, wow, a question.
Yeah.
Why? What happened here? And to jump into that process of doing the research is so much fun.
It's a little daunting because I think I had a lot of chutzpah. I'm not a particularly trained historian, although I'm a college professor, and there are 18,000 books on Lincoln, and I had the nerve to find a little niche that nobody bothered to explore before. And it was quite an adventure.
Well, I find it fascinating. As I said, I love Lincoln. Well, you know, it is, I don't know, it is driving me crazy that there are so many people who don't know anything about anything. And you watch television sometimes and this man on the street kind of questions and they'll say, who was president when, and who was Abraham Lincoln? Like, duh, you know, but I'm not, you know, you're a college professor. I'm not saying something about the educational process in this country, but I had, when my son was young, we had a exchange student from France, and she came, and she was, you know, 18 years old at the time, and she is absolutely delightful, absolutely knew everything about American history. I mean, she was like my equal, and I know a lot about American history, and so I was shocked that this girl from France knew so much about American history. How do they get through school without knowing who Abraham Lincoln was?
Well, I think everybody sort of knows who Abraham Lincoln was, but they don't really know much about him. And that was what I found is fascinating, because the period between his boyhood, which is a bit of a mythology now, and his becoming president is a blank. Most people know nothing. This book deals with that period.
It does, and it's fascinating. I love it because you have pictures in here. You have the street layout. We're all so used to Google Earth, we can look at street layouts so nicely. And it's so nice that she's got in here a map, and she's got everybody's house, and she's numbered them, and you can follow along who lived in what house. I think that's so cool. I love that. When I came across that, I thought, oh, I just love that, because I love to look at Google Earth. Well, sometimes it's heartbreaking because I looked at my old neighborhood in Detroit and it's not there anymore. There's only one building. But, you know, it's just so, so interesting, and that you could go and do this.
Well, also the fact that it exists, the neighborhood still exists. It's the only one, I think, of any American president where there's actually four blocks, a neighborhood that is still intact. A number of the houses have been taken down, but enough of them remain. So you have the integrity of the neighborhood as it once was. And it was a very multicultural, multi-ethnic neighborhood.
That's what surprised me. I was surprised by the combination of people who lived in that neighborhood.
And I was too, and I think that's what got me started, because a block down south of Lincoln home was it, the house isn't there anymore, Patsy, but the plaque is, it belonged to Jameson Jenkins, who was a free black who was apparently a conductor for the Underground Railroad, and he lived on that street, and his brother and his mother-in-law, and they all were part of that neighborhood. And in fact, he's the one who drove Lincoln to the rail station when he left for the presidency. And next door was an Irish Catholic, and down the street was a French Canadian. It was a very, very interesting neighborhood.
Well, it is interesting to think about the footsteps that he walked on, other people's footsteps, and he knew these people, and they knew him. And mm-hmm. How did you do this research? Because it's, you know, 18,000 books on Lincoln.
There's a lot.
A lot.
Well, that's a good question, Patsy. I think what started me on the right road, and he's my co-author, Richard Hart, a wonderful, wonderful gentleman who's a lawyer in Springfield and a historian for Springfield. When I was looking up data in the internet, I don't know how we did research without the internet. It's unbelievable. I was looking up African Americans in Springfield. His name came up because he'd written the only research articles on the subject. So I contacted him and I told him what I was doing. And he said to me, "Can I help?" And I've kidded him about that because he got roped in sort of kicking and screaming. But we worked really well together. And I think his research on the African Americans and other aspects of the community helped direct my attention from the beginning.
And it is fascinating. The photos, the little stories about each of the families, so well done. Of course, being a professor, you're a good writer. It's you know, some of it must come naturally, but you've written little stories about each of the families, and I think it's, you know, when you're writing a history book and when you're writing a novel, so many people write novels, and particularly I was thinking of several romance authors I know who write books set in during this period, like prior to the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And to have a book like this at your fingertips where you really can sort of get into it and learn things, I love this.
Oh, I'm so glad that you've enjoyed it.
Oh, I love books like this. I love books that you read it once and then you keep it because it's a reference book that you can go back to and just pick up and check it out again. And if you're, for a writer, if you're working on something, maybe use a little bit of something from this book. And, of course, making an acknowledgement at the back of the book and say, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bonnie Paul, this wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful book that you've done that really has inspired, because it is inspiring. I've just in this book, from reading it, if I had time, which I don't have time, but if I did have time, I've already thought of like three novels that could come out of this book.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that great?
Just to take one of them and one of the families and then start the novel from there.
Well, that's fascinating because as I was telling you before the show, I decided to do a children's book on the little boys in the neighborhood told by one of their friends. And it's sort of a spinoff. It's mostly historical fact. There's a little fiction in it. And that was a great fun project because it's spoken in a bit of a Huckleberry Finn dialect. And so it's another aspect of the neighborhood from the children's point of view.
Okay. Well, maybe you're going to write those three novels that I thought of because there's three that I identified in here. I said, "Wow! Oh, whoa, I could take that and run with it." Mm. And it might start off, now this is nonfiction, but you can easily take these stories and
embellish it,
running with it.
That's right.
I bet you could make a. I've got her started. Now she's going to have to get home. She's going to start sit down. She's going to start writing because she's going to have like a trilogy here. We're going to have a trilogy because I thought three stories. So she's going to do a trilogy, right?
Oh well, I won't commit to it, but I appreciate your faith in me.
Well, I think you can do it. I think you can do it. Listen, we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we're going to keep talking. But we'll be back in a few minutes.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Bonnie Paul, who has written a really fascinating book called Lincoln Springfield Neighborhood. And I'm going to talk to her in a few minutes. But first, I want to remind everyone that Brenda Drake's Pitch Madness is coming up. And the deadlines are approaching. And I want everyone who has not heard about it to think about jumping in and doing Pitch Madness. Pitch Madness it's a combination. We have Pitch Wars and Pitch Madness. Pitch Madness is now starting in February, and Pitch Wars comes later on. But Pitch Madness is where you can submit a small, just a small portion of idea, and it is very, it's an intriguing way to meet agents. Agents are now flocking to this site, and so I want you to all, you know, think about just jumping right in here. And I want to, again, one of the problems that when I tell people, when you are a writer, register your name. Now, Brenda Drake, of course, I think came upon registering late because she has Brenda-Drake, and that's always a problem. People sometimes don't find you, but just all you have to do is type Brenda Drake, which I think is a fantastic name. I just love that name. And you can go to her schedule there, and she talks about the schedule, which is February 24th. And that's the submission date is open, opens, and it's open for 24 hours. So you have 24 hours to get your pitch. And that's like an elevator pitch, just like a pitch for that you would do for a book where you get 1 minute to tell somebody about your book, or in the film industry about your movie. So it's very short, very quick, but because of her later on in the year towards the summertime, she has Pitch Madness where you actually put in your book. Agents follow her, agents work with her, and it is a wonderful way for agents to see your name, perhaps to get interested, and many agents have followed up on the people who participate in her pitch wars and pitch madness. So February 24th, it's very close, and you have 24 hours. So you can go to her website, which is brenda-drake.com, or you can go to mine. I have a link on my featured page. Go to my interviews featured, and you have right there Brenda Drake's interview where she explains exactly the process, what you have to do, and then jump in. What do you have to lose? You might attract the attention of an agent, and that's what we all want to do. Which reminds me, I have a special song for them. This is a song I always play for agents when I have them on because it is how all writers feel about them.
Sincerely yours.
I'll be yours, sincerely yours. All my life, sincerely. Night and day, I'll pray you're mine. Spring or fall, rain or shine, though I can't be close to you, don't blame me for wanting to. Don't blame me if I should try.
Yes. Agents. First of all, for all you agents out there trolling me, hi. I am so happy that you are listening to my program. And I was so ecstatic when one of you contacted me 2 weeks ago to say that you found three of our local writers that are worthy of at least you looking at them for the first time and hopefully a second time and hopefully actually one day meeting them. Because they are sincerely yours. And, you know, I want to tell all the writers out there, I know that you alternate. Sometimes you think that agents are the best in the world, and sometimes you can't stand them. You don't even want to hear the name, but you've gone through the process. So if an agent takes you on, they become an angel. And if they don't answer your query letters, they become the devils, I guess, or whatever. You just can't even stand the word agent anymore. But you have to keep trying. I've spoke to so many writers who just almost gave up, and then at the end, they finally found an agent. And you know, it's difficult. We live in this difficult situation where a writer, you write a book and you want it out there, and it's just wonderful. It's having this ability with Amazon to just put your book up, you know, and see it there and start selling it. It's a wonderful feeling. But on the other hand, you have to think, if you want to go the agent route, that it does take a long time. It is not a short process. From the time that you find an agent to the time that a book is published can be years. Well, it will be at least 18 months, probably 2 years, because it is a process. And when an agent gets it, then they work it around their agency, then they work it around to an editor, then they work it around to, you know, it's a process. So it's not an overnight thing, and you just have to be patient. And I've had many wonderful agents on, but one of my favorite is Barbara Poel from the Irene Goodman Agency. And she is just a fantastic agent. And I have a little clip from her that I want to play, and it just sort of puts everything in focus for you.
Well, Patsy, let me tell you a little trick I would say to your listeners as far as querying goes. The really little device that I use, it's easy to remember. When you do your query letter, you're going to talk about the hook, the book, and the cook. Now, the hook is going to be something straightforward, you know, great white shark terrorizes small New England town over 4th of July. So that's Jaws. And then the book section is going to be 4 or 5 lines of premise, not plot, premise of the book. And then the cook section is going to be a small bio about you. And that bio can say, you know, I'm a stay-at-home dad with 3 children, and I wrote this in my spare time. Or it can be, you know, I've been published at such and such a place, and I got a writing grant from such and such. The bio part doesn't really matter as far as I'm not looking. It's not your resume as far as how qualified you are to write. It's just a little something about why this book, why you, why now. So again, your query letter should just simply be the hook, the book, and the cook. I think Sophie Littlefield is an author of mine who has the best query letter, and I asked her to put her query letter on her website for people to refer to. So SophieLittlefield.com, I believe, is her website, and it's just a very straightforward query, but you'll see everything broken down perfectly, what I was looking for. And that query, I mean, she sent me that query 10 years ago. She's been my client for 9 years plus. So, I mean, to me, that still stands the test of time as a very solidly written query.
Now, that is great advice, and I hope that you will go to my webpage. It's on the featured section, and you can listen to the entire interview. It is a wonderful interview. She is Barbara is very generous with her advice. I call her the instant agent, because she took a book written by Tracy Chi. It's called The Reader, and Barbara turned it into a New York Times instant bestseller. Not just a bestseller, an instant bestseller. It went on the day it went on, boom, it exploded all over the place. She was going to actually take it to auction, but it was just, she was on fire. Barbara was on fire with this book. She loved this book, and she took Tracy Chi to become an instant New York Times bestselling author. And this is what you really want to try if you can get a great agent. When you have a book and you know, it's hard. It's hard sometimes to get an agent, and sometimes you even some of the greatest books I've read, they didn't get an agent. But you don't have to give up. There are books that, for example, if you publish independently, there are books that are picked up sometimes. by agents afterwards, and they will run with it if they think that it's a worthy book. So you have to keep trying, and I hope that you will go to you can go to IreneGoodman.com. Irene has been a guest on this program many times, and she has 6 or 7 agents. She has one of the most dynamic agencies in New York because she really works, again, with the author and to build a career. She's interested in a long term. She doesn't want sort of a one-off writer. She wants a writer who's going to be writing for years. And Barbara is particularly good at identifying these type of writers. And so with all query letters, let me remind all of you, don't send out just query letters to just any old person. Don't start with that, I'm going through the alphabet routine. That's not the way to approach an agent. Agents, contrary to some people's idea, agents are human. They are human. They love to read. They want to read. They want to find the great writer, the next bestseller, the next instant New York Times bestseller. But you have to approach the right one at the right time, and you have to know something about what they're interested in. You can't send, absolutely, you cannot send to an agent a type of book that they're not interested in, because they're not going to respond, and then you're going to get depressed, and then it's a vicious circle. So think about it, and for example, Bonnie here is writing a children's book, and she's going to look for an agent. She has to make sure that she's looking for agents who like children's books and who deal with children's books, particularly if it's a picture book, because, again, one of the problems with writers, and thinking about Bonnie's book here, many writers they'll write a children's book, and then they will immediately go out and try to find an illustrator themselves, and they'll want to work with the illustrator, and they might even commit to the illustrator. And let me put it this, I'll go backwards in time. I did this, so I know what I'm speaking about. Long time ago, years ago, I thought that's the way you did it. Well, I had a girl who was an illustrator, and I had the book, and I had the illustrations, and I thought, this is going to be great. And then, this is why you need a lawyer, I'm going to tell you. I didn't know this when I was young, and I didn't understand the concept of protecting my rights. So here I have an illustrator who suddenly finds out, and this is really ridiculous, because we had agreed on what we were going to do. I mean, I thought we were friends. We were going to put this book out, and we were going to work on it. And then she found out, I think she thought, she found out that there was some money in my life. Maybe she thought my husband was going to be a millionaire. I don't know. Suddenly, from I'm paying her $300, she's like getting these visions of $300,000. Like, I don't think so. You know, I don't think that's so. That's why I can advise people on this kind of thing. Yeah, need an agent. Children's book agents are among the very, very best, because they have to do two things. They don't just work with the words that are written on a piece of paper. They have to also work with the images. And a great children's agent knows which agent to attach to which word. So that's a talent. That's a specialty talent that goes beyond just regular agents. So I always recommend Andrea Brown, absolutely one of the best children's agents. But there are several others that I really love, and some have been on my program, and I'm going to have some more children's agents on my program in April. As a matter of fact, I've got 2 agents coming on who specialize, one in picture books and one in young, sort of middle grade type of books. And I was mentioning to Bonnie that children's books are among the most difficult. And just as an example, writers will say, I'll start with a kid's book and then I'll work up. No, it's the other way around. And David Baldacci is an example of that. David Baldacci is going to be on my program, and he, of course, is famous for his great thrillers and fantastic action books. Now he has written a young adult book. So he has gone, not backwards, but he has realized that it is very important to write a really good young adult book to attract more readers. And that's the name of the game. We all want to get more people out there reading. So I'm back now here to Bonnie Paul. How can we get more people reading? Hey, she's a professor. What were you a professor of? Writing?
Well, I was an English professor.
An English professor.
Interestingly enough, I did a lot of work just with teaching reading because I was mainly in community college, and many of the students arriving there read very poorly. And I did a whole PowerPoint on this, Patsy, called What Happened to American Reading on the History of Phonics, and how students came out sight reading and didn't know how to really analyze words. And that was pretty popular for a while. But I think just helping in the process of teaching reading at a lower level, so the student can read easily and enjoy it, I think is a beginning.
And, I have been hopeful because the important thing is we need more readers. We need readers who really approach books and understand how to read. And I was happy with J.K. Rowling when she came out with her books because young people realized that they could read, not just read, but read big books. I mean, I think one of her books was 650 pages. And children realized they could read. And so that's why it is so important for parents to get their kids to read at a young age. You mentioned phonics, and it's very funny. My life has been a struggle to get parents to teach their kids phonics. Every kid that's come into my life since, I don't know how this started. I was reading when I was practically a baby. My mother would read to us at a very young age. We had absolutely no other form of entertainment. We were very poor. But she would read. And somewhere along the line, we all learned phonics. And once we did that, we could read anything.
That's right.
So by the time I was 5, I'm reading Perry Mason. And much to her consternation, because she didn't know I could read Perry Mason. But, it's so important. Phonics, really, I do not understand this controversy over the years. I don't understand what they're still doing because phonics is the key. If you can read, once you learn phonics, you can read. Mm-hmm. And you have to maybe sound things out. Even, it's so funny because I'm from Northern Michigan. I still mispronounce words. When I read the words perfectly, but sometimes I'll mispronounce words because in my childhood, we didn't hear fancy words, those were big words. It's funny that I this still happens to me, although I've now read, 5,000, 6,000 books or more probably. Those are how many I have. So I've read more. I won't even talk about the library books that I never returned. I'm banned from all libraries. They don't allow me in because I never return a library book. Because if I go in and I like the book, it's mine. I can't give it back. So now, it's wonderful that you're working on a children's book because I think this is a fantastic market, and it's been really opened up so much by some well-known people like Bill O'Reilly, mm-hmm. who has written children's book, Rush Limbaugh, Brad Meltzer. He, of course, a famous writer of thrillers. He wanted to write books for his children, mm-hmm. and has written an entire series of wonderful children's books.
That's what I've noticed. And I think that the point you made too, Patsy, about parents reading to children early on is very important so that they grow up with the books because it's a visual world, television and cell phones. And, they're saying, well, books are out of fashion. But we can't let that happen.
Exactly. We can't. And it's a matter of good writing. If you, in the case of J.K. Rowling, she captured an audience because her writing is solid. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it is just good. It's engaging. And my boys liked the British versions of the books, actually. The British versions are just a little bit different. It's like the Hardy Boys. The modern Hardy Boys aren't, I don't think, as good as the old Hardy Boys. If you want to buy Hardy Boys or even Nancy Drew books, go to the flea markets and find the old ones, because they're much, I think they're just much better. And again, it's all, but getting your kids to read. And one of the things for my boys, the biggest treat of their life was always the book. What book we're going to get this week. That mm-hmm. was, if they got anything, it was a book. And all these plastic toys and all this other than Lego, of course, never goes away. And I think Lego is one of the, when they're talking about building blocks of the mind, Lego has to come into it, because Lego is so great for children.
Mm-hmm.
It really teaches them so much. But then if they read and they have all these wonderful fantasies and or historical things to then make new Legos out of, they create their own worlds this
That's
way.
Right. That's right.
So,
and of course, Abraham Lincoln, getting back to the original subject, is a good person to study, because reading wasn't easy for him to get books. He walked miles and miles in order to have a book, and he had no electric lights. He had to read it by the firelight, and the value and what it did to his life.
And the determination. He wanted to know. He wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. And he really did. And, of course, so in his neighborhood, he lived in this neighborhood from what age to what time to what time?
It was about 17 years 17. Until he became elected, and he left for Washington in 1861. And they started out as a fairly young couple, and one child was born before they moved, and the other boys when they lived there. And the thing that's interesting is he was just a guy. You know, people didn't leave long memoirs about Lincoln, my neighbor. They didn't know how famous he was going to be. He was just the guy next door, and a very attractive, appealing personality. But there weren't a lot of original documents that we had to go to from the neighbors. They just didn't write about him, you know.
So, tell me, which neighbors did, you know, just to share some of the stories of...
Of the neighbors?
Yeah.
Well, there were a couple things that stood out. First of all, like I mentioned, the diversity. And Dick Hart, my co-author, by the way, I promote collaboration if it's appropriate, because it can be like a good marriage or a bad marriage, but we had a wonderful working relationship. And his background, he knew all the ethnicity of that neighborhood. And so there's several chapters where he goes into the Germans, the French, the Irish, the blacks, and he knew that not only those four blocks, he knew everybody in and around the neighborhood.
And there was even Portuguese. This is the fantastic thing about America. Mm-hmm. All of these different nationalities all blended in, and here living in one small neighborhood.
That's right. And I love the quote from Pete Seeger that we use at the beginning. I think it's... particularly in times like this, where there's so much rancor and divisive attitude, where he said, in a frontier community, which Springfield was, folks had to cooperate. In every neighborhood, in every city of the world, we have to learn again how to cooperate. And I think that's a key thing that in Lincoln's time, they had to. There were no hospitals, there were no burial homes. People were born, died in the homes. They had to help each other. And one of the recurrent themes is there were a lot of widows in that neighborhood. I think I counted six, and we're only talking about four blocks. And babies that died before they were five. And so they lived very close to life's essentials. And in one case, there's a story there that was very touching. Mary had given birth to her second son, and there was a neighbor who couldn't nurse the child because she was too ill. So Abraham Lincoln went and carried this infant across the street to Mary so she could nurse the child and then take back to the mother. to help out the neighbor. And that was one of many stories we ran across.
Yeah, that's a very touching story.
It is, yeah.
And exactly. Well, when she starts working on this trilogy, she's going to have a lot of... I'm getting her started here. I know it. I'm going to have her back. Well, maybe if she starts working in a year, we can have the first of the trilogies, because there are so many of these little
vignettes.
Exactly. Yeah. Details that really make a novel come alive. Mm-hmm. And that's why I know... there will be people who will be reading your book for ideas. And since you wrote the book, you're even full of more ideas. And I'm sure there's a lot that's not in the book. You just...
Yeah, well, you have to select
so much
some.
Research.
Yeah.
So much...
Yeah, the book is used now by the people who tour public through the Lincoln Home. It's kind of their handbook now, because it has so much information.
Well, it does. As I said, I just love it. The wonderful photos. Some of the photos I had never seen before.
Right.
You really pulled them out of wherever they've been hiding, because people weren't interested in the neighborhood. And now you've brought this all together. So I think it's great. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Patsy.
And so tell us a few. You had some of his servants you mentioned in here. Some of the Lincoln people who worked
in the house. Dick did a lot of research on that, and people who worked for him and people who lived near him, and it was a combination. We tell about both of them,
and of course that was funny about a Portuguese. It's there you are in the middle of Springfield, and we have a Portuguese.
Well, that's an interesting thing. When you go into a period of history, you find that all kinds of other lines, historical history lines from other areas come into what you're researching. Apparently in Portugal, on the Canary Islands during that time, there was a religious fracture between groups, and one group left the Canary Islands, and the people in Springfield offered them homes, a sanctuary to come, because they were being really tossed out of their home. And so that little enclave of Portuguese people settled in Springfield. It's a very strange little piece of history. And, of course, the ancestors gave birth to other, and so they're still there.
Well, exactly. That is one of the, first of all, it shows the beauty of America, mm-hmm. that people would reach out and offer sanctuary to these people. And that they would stay there and become Americans and thrive, mm-hmm. and keep going. And they're still there.
It's
a beautiful story.
Yeah, it
really is. It
is
lovely.
It's another little historical vignette that's part of that history.
Yeah. Oh, I think you've done a marvelous job. So besides the internet, did you actually go to any of the places? Well, you went to Springfield, of course.
I spent quite a bit of time in Springfield, and I worked in the Presidential Library. James Cornelius is the main historian there, curator, and everybody was so helpful. It was interesting. There's Springfield is like a time warp. You go back in time, and they've retained a lot of the building and the relationships of the building, so you feel like you're walking in the steps of Lincoln and Mary Lincoln. And the people there really cherish their history and preserve it and help you as a historian to create more data on Lincoln. And it was a very enriching experience for me.
Now, he was living there when he was elected to the presidency.
Exactly. He moved there went from Kentucky to Indiana and then into Illinois, and then from the Lincoln, they had lived at the Capitol had been in a different town, and Lincoln and some of his representatives got it moved to Springfield. And so Springfield became the center then at that point of political activity.
And what was it like when he was elected president? The town?
Well, they went crazy
at that
point.
They must have been excited, huh?
It was as shocking probably as Trump's
election.
Yeah, it was. He was kind of the least expected, and because there was so much division among the other candidates, he ended up on top.
Well, I cannot believe it. It's the time has just gone so quickly.
Yes.
It's been an absolute joy to talk to you.
You too,
Bonnie Paul. It's called Lincoln Springfield Neighborhood. You can get it at the Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I have a feeling we're going to have her back here in a year to talk about her trilogy. And because I'm going to get her to work. I'm going to inspire her here, because that's what I like to do. Because as I said to all of you, that one of the joys of life is, you know, to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So take some time this weekend and read and write. You know, read this lovely book, Lincoln Springfield Neighborhood. You might get inspired, and maybe you'll do a trilogy about Lincoln too, because there's in this book, there are a lot of books that can come out of here. And that's one of the wonderful things. And of course, if you're interested in more about Lincoln, read Stephen Harrigan's wonderful book, A Friend of Mr. Lincoln. It is really a fantastic book, and one that I highly recommend. And meanwhile, and one of the things that we're going to be having also, I was just listening to Stephen Harrigan's Audible version of A Friend of Mr. Lincoln, and it's a very interesting Audible version. And we're going to be having a program just about how to do Audible books and what you have to do to get your, this is for independent authors, how to get your book into Audible version, which is very popular now, and many people love Audible books. I was not a fan until I read my favorite book, which is A Gentleman in Moscow, and then I listened to the Audible version, and I was just bowled over by this Audible version, and I was so happy that I had the narrator, Nicholas Guy Smith, on, and he read some of A Gentleman in Moscow on air, and it was just so moving and so compelling. And I'm just crazy about this this narrator. His name is Nick Smith. He is called That Voice. That he has a website called That Voice, and he does a lot of voiceovers in Hollywood. But if ever I publish a book, I would love to have Nick be the narrator, because he has a voice that I have listened to for hours. And so it's something I wanted to do. I want to do a special program just about Audible books. Meanwhile, I want to say, I didn't say on Tuesday, happy Valentine's Day to my goddaughter, Kanisha, but I had already sent her Valentine early in the morning, like 5 o'clock in the morning, because I know she wakes up early and I wake up early. So I think she saw it. And also to Jim Lamb, one of my very favorite people in the whole world. And I want to just say, thank you so much, Jim, for everything you do for me. And remember, meanwhile, don't let anyone steal your joy. Just treasure it and share it. And this is Patsy with Z, hoping that you will say something nice to someone today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, who is always so great and so wonderful. And I really appreciate him. He is a big sweetheart Valentine himself. So thank you, and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bye, everybody.